and welcome to the Not Another Podcast. My name is Jamie Smith and I'm joined by Natalie, James and Kevin this week to talk about the 0-0 draw at Sunderland. Not much of a game to talk about, so probably quite a short podcast. I'm sure lots of you will be pleased to hear about that. Natalie's still in the hat, but not much of a match really, despite fairly strong teams being named by both managers.
Yeah, I don't think you can accuse either club of not taking the competition seriously. I think both sides made sensible changes in order to rotate their squad and to give some other players a chance, but neither fielded a particularly weak side. And I was quite surprised, really, to see such a difference in the quality of the game between the league game the week before and this cup tie. It wasn't the result that we wanted. I don't think any of us really wanted an extra game in there. But saying that, I said last week I really wanted a cup run. And if you offered me the option of a draw or a loss, I would have taken a draw. I would have preferred to have won, obviously, and got it done. But I'm delighted to still be in the hat for the fourth round. And I can really see Burnley, if we can get past Sunderland, I really think we're going to have a good chance of having a deep run this year.
Well, I think we talked on the podcast last week about a draw being far from ideal, but in the context of the fourth round draw, Burnley drawn against Bristol City or Fleetwood Town at home, if we get past Sunderland, Kevin, it starts to look like it might open up a little bit for us.
It does, yeah, and I think, you know, Sean Dyche was talking before the game, when he said that, you know, from a few purely like business and financial point of view, yeah, the cup isn't that important. You know, the Premier League is so much more important in that respect. But you know, the cup will always have that kind of sentimental value, but also that I think it can really, you know, the purpose of a football club essentially is to be as successful as possible. You know, it's to entertain the fans and entertaining the fans by being successful at the end of the day. And I want to see clubs taking things like this a bit more seriously. You know, you want to go as far as possible. You look at the likes of, you know, you see with so many Premier League teams who have got not really that much to play for, really. You know, the likes of, you know, kind of Bournemouth, who are probably not going to get dragged into relegation. We're not going to be fighting up at the top of the league, but yeah, they're changing all their team and getting knocked out. Surely, you know, the cup should be an ideal, you know, competition for a team like Bournemouth, and who should be going looking to go on and win it and get some silverware. Surely that's what you want to see as a fan. Surely that's what you want to achieve as footballers. And hopefully, you know, it'd be great to see us at Burnley do the same again. You know, we've been spoiled quite a lot in the last few seasons with great success. But, you know, you could say, you know, we're Burnley, you know, we're battling down the bottom. We're not, you know, one of the lesser quality teams in the Premier League, should we say. And you might say, you know, what's the point in winning two or three games and then getting knocked out in the quarterfinals or whatever? But, you know, we've defied the odds quite often. Who says we can't go as far as possible in the cup? Let's get, you know, you can go to Wembley and have a great day at Wembley, even go on and win it. You know, you might say I'm dreaming, but, you know, we're a Premier League team. We've got that quality. We've shown we've got quality against Premier League. We have some great wins in the Premier League this season. And, you know, why not? I think It's good to see, you know, we made a few changes, and hopefully, you know, we can continue to take it, you know, semi-serious. You know, there's always going to be some rotation in the cup, but hopefully we can still give it some respect, certainly a lot more than Bournemouth gave it, and get as far as we can. Surely that's what you want to see.
Yeah, I mean, Wigan won the cup not that long ago, obviously. Got relegated in the same season. We probably don't want to do that, but there's no reason why a cup got, like, Burnley can't go a long way in the competition. James, the game itself, light on chances really. I suspect some of them were determined not to get turned over like they were at the Turf. Burnley probably just about edged it though.
Yeah, it's a particularly second half. We looked, you know, the far better team. I thought we ended the game, you know, pretty strongly. And really, we had chances there to finish it, and we probably should have come away with sort of a 1-0 win on the day. But obviously, it goes to a replay now, which is really disappointing because I don't think anyone wants the, you know, the extra games. You know, we're in a strong position so far this season, but all it'd take is for the fixtures to start getting congested and a few injuries get picked up, and we could find ourselves sort of moving backwards through the table.
Well, you mentioned injuries there. That was one of the things that came out of the game at the stadium. Like, of course, Scott Arfield and Johan Gudmundsson both picking up hamstring injuries. I think they were both hamstring injuries. And that's the danger of naming quite a strong team, isn't it? That arguably the first two, the first choice wingers, both picked up injuries and might be out for a few weeks now. So you could argue that it should have been a more rotated team.
Yeah, I think it puts even more emphasis, obviously, on the you know, the January transfer window now, because I think all coming in, we all thought that winger was probably an area where we'd want a few more reinforcements, you know, so that maybe Arfield could be more of a backup player rather than, you know, a regular starter. And now that's even more pressing because Arfield's not available potentially to be a starter. And I think, you know, the problem with the FA Cup these days is that it has sort of lost its magic because putting your efforts into that can be so detrimental to you in the league. I mean, obviously you touched on Wigan winning it and getting relegated in the same season. Obviously, it's only a couple of seasons ago, Villa managed to make it to the final. And, you know, they've not been a good performing side for some time. You know, you look at Portsmouth, who spent so much money to win, you know, the FA Cup. And where are they now? So I think you do have to, you know, maybe just focus on the league when you're in our position. And I think it's really for teams sort of 6th to 10th to be the ones to try and challenge the big boys to win it, because they're relatively safe.
It will be quite interesting to see if it's as strong a team that we name for the replay when we'll be favourites, I assume, given our home form. Despite it being quite a poor game, Natalie, positives, a clean sheet, always welcome, especially away from home, and showing that we can get results at teams that are going to be competing with us towards the bottom of the table. We've got a lot of these away games coming up, as we mentioned on the podcast before, and we're going to need to go to places like Sunderland and get results. So to prove that we can do that, that maybe shifts the mental issue that we seem to have away from home a little bit.
Yeah, you would certainly hope so, wouldn't you? It's not a loss. It wasn't, you know, it was a clean sheet. And like you say, there are huge positives to take from that result. I would have liked to have seen us win just for that extra psychological benefit. However, saying that, I don't think there can be much argument as to who dominated that game. And Burnley were clearly on top. And the only reason why we didn't win convincingly is just for some reason we struggled to get the ball in the net. You know, when you watch the highlights, for example, the only highlight it shows of Sunderland's game was the penalty shout on Defoe. So they were, you know, they weren't that good. And even in the cup with a relatively strong side, they should also be trying to beat Burnley at home just to prove that the game against us at Turf Moor was a blip and that they can beat us. I think the result of that game will swings the psychological advantage in Burnley's favour, not in Sunderland's. We went to Sunderland and didn't lose. And you know, whilst we need to pick up some points away from home, a point is still a decent result. On the flip side, Sunderland got absolutely hammered at Turf Moor and then failed to beat us on a weakened Burnley side, albeit not massively weakened, but they still failed to beat a weakened side at home. So despite it only being a draw, I think it's advantage Burnley, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely advantage Burnley. I'm sure we'll talk about the replay in more detail on next week's podcast, which will be out before the replay, hopefully, all being well. One of the big positives as well, Kevin, the return of Sir Joseph Barton to the Burnley midfield. I don't think anyone saw it coming when he left the club just 6-7 months ago, but back in the midfield and looking like he's never been away.
Yeah, I think we all expected Barton to come in and... Yeah, it is good to see him getting some game time. You probably expect that he's probably going to be in the side not when Defoe's in. You'd probably expect they're not going to play together that much this season. That's what I just suspected, particularly with Defoe's fitness problems. You might have thought that Barton might come in for Defoe. You know, he might come in for the last half hour when Defoe inevitably comes off the field. It's good to see him back in the side. Good to see him giving a good account of himself. I think he had a bit of he showed a bit of passion as well. I think he went over to the fans at the end of the match for chanting his name. He patted his badge or something like that. So it's good to see. I think he's obviously always going to get a bit of a sharp reception, should we say, from the Sunderland fans. But I think he got a good reception from the Burnley fans. And I think it's quite nice. It's a really good opportunity actually for him to come in at that cup game. It's all fallen quite nicely actually when it comes to all that, because
yeah, the pressure was off, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, he was always going to be kind of he's had a few friendly games with under 23s, and then he's kind of come in on a friendly game. So it's a nice soft introduction back to the team. And yeah, like I say, it takes that pressure off a little bit. So yeah, it's fantastic to see, and hopefully he can play a big part this season. I know that he's been granted an extension to respond to the FA on those charges, which takes it to the middle of February or something. So maybe he can get a couple of games in before he gets before he gets a 6-month ban.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of the appeal thing, or the hearing, whatever it is. I'd have thought we'd rather have got it underway and all sorted as soon as possible, but I suppose that if Barton needs time to make a better defence, maybe it's better to put it on the back burner for a little while, but it's not going to make sure that he's not punished. We saw with Andre Gray did the same thing, didn't he, and ended up getting a 4-game ban. James, Kevin mentioned Defoe there. I was quite surprised he was in the team, but completed his first 90 minutes, which is a really important step for a player who we seem to talk about his fitness and injury issues constantly on the podcast.
I wish I had like a party popper or something now to set off in front of the mic just to celebrate the momentous occasion. It was a bit of a surprise to see him start. I thought Aidan O'Neill might have got a run out, but I think it's good to see him get 90 minutes under his belt. I guess there's a decent gap between games with the third round of the FA Cup being on a Saturday, and then you've got the full week, so maybe it was just a way of getting him, you know, more involved in what ended up being a more of a low intensity game than your normal league game. But it also could be that it wasn't intentional, and obviously injuries forced Dash's hand. So maybe he felt when he was looking at players to rest, it was more key to rest Gray than rest Defoe.
I was disappointed that Aidan O'Neill wasn't in the squad. Really, I think it would have been a really good opportunity to get him a bit more game time against Premier League opposition. In the end, you know, he probably might not have played with injuries forcing Dyche's substitutions and also the game hanging in the balance. But you can imagine if the game had been quite comfortable, you know, later in the second half, it would have been a really good opportunity to give Aidan O'Neill a bit more, you know, game time against a Premier League opposition without the pressure of a Premier League game. But it didn't happen, so I was disappointed by that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one, O'Neill, because we saw quite a bit of him earlier in the season, and he's fallen off the radar a little bit. But I suspect he was only playing earlier because there was not really anyone else. Although he did quite well. I just think it was more a lack of alternatives as much as him being an outstanding prospect. Going down low might be the best thing for Aidan O'Neill in the short term. Changes at the back, Natalie, despite the clean sheet Tom Heaton had the day off, Nick Pope didn't have a lot to do, but James Tarkowski seems to take the opportunity. I was a bit surprised that he played with Keane when everyone seems to think that he's going to be Keane's successor, but did a good job and maybe gives Dash something to think about a little bit, with Bedmi having made a couple of mistakes recently despite overall being good this season.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Tarkowski. I think he's a great talent, and he's also one of those players that's been quite unlucky, really. I suspect he was probably brought in to partner Keane, and unfortunately, a bit like the Trippier-Walker situation, he's come in and me suddenly found the form of his life, and he's not been able to muscle his way into the first team. But every single time he's played for us, he's put in and even actually when he's had to cover in midfield, he's put in a really good performance and a really solid game, and I'm a huge fan. I agree with you. I fully expected it to be me he played alongside, just because, like you say, we are expecting to lose Keane at the end of the season. But why not? You know, if you are teeing Tarkowski up to be Keane's replacement, then it kind of makes sense to put him in the same team as him for 90 minutes, so he can learn from him and they can pick up a few tips and, you know, maybe learn the game together, and Tarkowski can watch Keane play and you know, try and model him. But yeah, it was a good performance. I thought Pope did all right, actually. I thought, like you say, he didn't have an awful lot to do, but he certainly didn't. He still looked sharp when he was called upon, and, you know, he still managed to stay in the game. So on the whole, I was relatively pleased.
Yeah, I think Tarkowski's been a big plus point. It's really difficult, I think, for players when you know you're not going to play unless there's injuries or suspensions, really. And Tarkowski's had to fill in a couple of different positions, like you're saying. It's been 5 minutes off the bench sometimes, or coming on just for injury times, I'll see a game out. But yeah, he always seems completely committed and always seems to do something that impresses people. So Dash's obviously got a lot of trust in him. It's just a case that there's not a place for him in the team at the moment, which is unfortunate from his point of view. But I think everyone expects Tarkowski to be a member of the team next season, Kevin, just because Michael Keane's surely not going to be a Burnley player for too much longer, even if we can stay up. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, you almost hope that in a weird way, but there's going to be a lot of competition for Keane in the summer, because it means he's done something right for us. And yeah, obviously he's got, I think he's probably got ambitions of being a big Premier League player, and I think he's absolutely got that in him. He's improving at a phenomenal rate as well. You look at the difference from when we were Premier League last time, when he was on loan. I think he was a permanent player the second half, and he was struggling to get him a team behind Michael Duff, who always better to Duff, who was a very fantastic servant for us. He was certainly not anything like the player that Michael Keane is now. And last season he improved so much, and this season you can see him. He's still improving over time. He's a fantastic talent, and I think I read something about his time at Manchester United recently, and about how when he was a younger player there, he was almost written off by Man United's youth team coaches. And he quit school, got a private tutor, and really forced the club to take him on as a more kind of full-time young pro, and really shows, you know, his determination to be a top-class player and his ambition. So yeah, I'd be surprised if he's a Burnley player next season, Michael Keane. But that, like I said, it's not, obviously it's never great to lose a player of his quality, but we know we've got a player in the reserves waiting to come in who's got quality. Everything we've seen of Tarkowski has been very good. My only concern is I really hope that we can... forget my balance, really, because we've been playing Tarkowski in quite a few different positions. He's been playing in midfield quite a lot this season, and you just run the risk of kind of him losing that defensive speciality, because if he's going to be playing in midfield, you're going to assume he might be having slightly different coaching to improve different parts of his game, whereas if he's playing as a full-time defender, he can really focus on that side of his game. So you've got to get that balance right between giving him that football that he's going to want. You know, if he's just not playing any game time at all season, he's going to become unhappy. But I just hope that he doesn't end up being one of those players who ends up playing in so many different positions, but not able to really focus down and be a specialist at one.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, he is a defender. It's just we've used him in other roles. I think it's not that long ago since he did a Q&A when someone asked him about playing midfield, and he said he'd basically never done it before. But I think it's a plus point having players that can play different positions. I'm sure when he plays at the back regularly for us, which, like I say, I expect to be next season, I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem. I don't think you forget how to be a defender just because you've played in midfield a bit. But yeah, it's less than ideal, I think, for Tarkowski at the moment. But he doesn't strike me as the sort of person he's going to kick off. He'll understand that it's very much temporary at the moment. At the other end of the pitch, though, James, another game away from home with a goal for Andre Gray. He hasn't scored yet away from home this season. Sam Vokes didn't have the best game. Ashley Barnes missed a good chance. Is there a sense at the moment that if Gray doesn't score, Burnley don't score, having shared the goals out so well earlier in the season?
Oh, well, maybe. I mean, obviously, over the festive period, it was very much the Andre Gray show. And I think that Barnes chance is one that you can look back on. I think, you know, if it had fallen to Gray, you'd definitely expect Gray to take it. It could be one that maybe knocks Barnes' confidence a little bit as well, and could impact him going forward. I thought Volks, from you know what I've seen in the game, it was a dire one anyway. But he didn't really seem in the game, to be honest. And you know, the most involved he seemed to get is being offside for the chance that ultimately Cartley would have put away. It's a bit of a weird one, because I think Volks, he fits a certain style, doesn't he? And, you know, you look at the goals he's scored this season, and a lot of them have been reasonably out of character for him, I think. They've not really been Sam Volk's goals. And when he has been on, I don't feel we're aiming for him enough with the crosses. And, you know, ultimately, his strength is in the air. And I think when he's on the field, I'd like to see us try and exploit that a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit of a lack of crossing quality in the squad, to be honest. I don't think, apart from maybe Goodmanson and Defoe from set pieces, I don't think we've really got quality deliverers in the squad, and that's probably something that we've lacked since Trippier left, really.
Yeah, every now and then you get something decent from Ward and from Lowton, but they've not got the consistency that you have with you know, a player like Trippier, and as a result, you know, there's chances where they put their best crosses in and no one's on the end of it, and then there's times when there's people in perfect position to be on the end of it and the cross is rank and, you know, deep to the other corner flag.
Yeah, I think we've probably exhausted as much as we can from Sunderland 0, Burnley 0. We've done well to get 20 minutes or so out of that. But let's move on to the next bit of the podcast, everyone's favourite bit. Over to Natalie for Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week.
Indeed. Special FA Cup indeed. Did it sound different?
No, it didn't sound different at all.
Oh well, never mind. This week's Tweet of the Week comes from our long-term listener, Anna. We all have a bit of a girl crush on this girl. It's Sarah, whose Twitter handle is Schwitz. And she sent a very tongue-in-cheek tweet, which made me laugh quite a lot, and just summed up pretty much how we felt about the Sunderland game. And her tweet was, "At least we didn't lose away." So very much agree with you, Sarah. Well done, that won our Tweet of the Week.
It was only 0-0. At least it was only 0-0.
I know, at least we didn't concede one goal. It's getting better.
It is getting better. Slowly but surely, it is getting better. Moving on then to talk about the weekend's games. Southampton, the visitors to the Turf. They've been quite up and down this season, James, and they've got problems at the back at the moment with Virgil van Dijk linked with a move away. The captain, Jose Fons, has put in a transfer request. So it's not really clear he's going to be playing in defence for them. And they've got problems up front as well with Charlie Austin out injured and Jay Rodriguez not really firing. So this is going to be another opportunity for yet another home win.
Yeah, I think Southampton have been quite a strange team so far this season. You know, you look at the players they've got, and particularly up front, I think they almost suffer from maybe having too much choice of ways to play. And obviously with Austin being out, who's, you know, a classic goal scorer who can sort of, you know, as long as you get the ball around the box and if it falls to him, he's probably going to score. Whereas the players they've got, I think, otherwise, so Jay, I think, needs a certain style to play too. And others also need a different style. And I think as a result, they kind of don't really bed in and start working together as a team. But I think, obviously, it's a great opportunity. It's a good time to play them. Our home record is fantastic so far. So hopefully it should be another 3 points, I think.
A tricky one in terms of team selection for Dash, this one, Kevin. He's got the extra option with Joey Barton now. And 4-4-2's worked pretty well. In recent games, he seems to have gone back to the 4-4-2 and ditched the 4-5-1 a little bit. Barnes and Gray seems a decent combination, but the midfield, do we have the midfield options for a 4-4-2? What do you think the strongest pair is out of the four that we've got? Marnie, Defoe, Hendrick and Barton now.
Obviously, I'd love to see Defoe playing. I think he, you know, we've been saying this all season, but we want to see him play more football. Be interested to see what happens there. He's played. He played 90 minutes against Sunderland. Don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. He might have shown to Dyche that he's improving his fitness. He can do that, and Dyche might be happy with that. He's played well the other week as well. Or it might be that Dyche thinks, okay, he's played about 90 minutes, so I don't want to give him too much football with his fitness or whatever it is. So I'll drop him down again. Or it might just be that we've got doubts over whether Sean Dyche really fancies Defoe in a 4-4-2. So I think that's the big call for Dyche. It'll be really, really interesting to see what he does. I'd love to see Defoe come in, play alongside Hendricks. Hendricks available again now, isn't he?
Yeah. I think we're assuming that all four are going to be available, which is useful because we might not have any wingers.
Yeah, it's difficult to predict what Sean Dyche is going to do with formation these days, which I'm still struggling to get to grips with. It just doesn't seem right. But I would expect him to go with a 4-4-2 again. It's been working reasonably well of late, and I can't really see any reason why he'd want to change that unless it's forced or if he wants to fit in three of his star midfielders. I think my preference would be to see Defoe play alongside Hendrick, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him start on the bench and see Marnie come in alongside him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've got no idea what Dash is going to do. I mean, I think having such strength now in midfield, which is another bizarre thing to say about Dyche's Burnley, that we've got four very competent central midfielders now. You kind of feel like we should play as many of them as possible. But we know that Andre Gray is not really suited to playing up front on his own, and you can't leave Gray out because he's been scoring so many goals recently. And with the problems out wide as well, Natalie, it does leave Dyche in a bit of a quandary for this one, if we're to assume that Arfield and Gudmundsen aren't going to make it.
Yeah, it is a real tricky one, isn't it? It's I don't know what he's going to do. Could he go 4-3-3, maybe? Play? I suppose he'd have to. If he hasn't got any wingers, what else is he going to do?
Well, we're saying he hasn't got any wingers. Plays... He does have George Boyd. I expect George Boyd to be in the team. It's just a case of...
He has Michael Cartley.
Who? Oh, for God's sake.
who that?
Cartley bingo.
I think that's an interesting point, though. And I thought for a while...
No, he's right. Go on, James. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Maybe 4-3-3 could be a good idea. You know, you could play Vaux in the middle and Gray and Barnes just either side of him, and that could bring you a bit of success with Hendrick, Marnie and Defoe behind him, or Barnes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've argued for 4-3-3. I've argued for 4-3-3 quite a bit this season. I don't think Vaux is playing well enough to start at the minute, to be honest. I'd be keeping him. And I think he's quite well suited to being on the bench, whereas Barnes comes on, makes a nuisance for himself, Gray comes on and like does his best, but Vaux seems to actually have an impact when he comes on. So I'd probably stick with those two, but I think Boyd can play further up.
I think you could play Boyd in the hole, couldn't you? I think you could play Boyd or
Cartley, or even Gudmundsen when he's fit, I think, in that advanced role. But obviously, I think the reason that Dash doesn't use it is that he likes his players to track back. And
But Boyd can do that. So if we're talking specifically on Saturday's game, that's actually not a bad option to put Boyd in a three up top, because one thing he can do is track back. Yeah,
Boyd can. I'm not sure if the other two could, because it's a lot to ask for a winger to get from basically edge of their box back to their own box and then back again.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone can do it, George Boyd probably can.
Boyd can but, run. Yeah, he can run.
I think the point...
Can't really dribble, but...
or do anything else. I think that the point of playing Boyd further up the pitch would be that he wouldn't have to do all that running, and then we might get more from him creatively, maybe some goal threat, something in the final third that we just don't really get.
He must be the most frustrating player that Burnley have had in years
to watch. Yeah, because, but Dash must love it because there's
more to him than running, but all we ever get really is the running. Every now and then he scores a great goal.
Do you know what I think one of the major problems is with George Boyd
is that he's not Michael Cartley.
No. I've said this before, and I genuinely think it, you know, everybody, he's been branded to us as being a striker. He's still on the website as a striker. You know, people criticize him because he's not creating chances, he's not running at defenders, and he's not making a nuisance himself up front. But his defensive work is actually really, really good. If you watch him in a game, when he does track back and he does draw defenders away and he does sort of try and get the ball back in those defensive areas, he actually does a really good job of that. But because that's not perceived... No, but that you can't. But because he's perceived to be a winger or as a makeshift striker, he's it's like there's an assumption that he's failed every single game, and it's that half empty, half full analysis. People say he's had a poor game because he spent all of it in defence, whereas actually he's very good at that.
Yeah, I get annoyed more with Dash's use of Boyd than Boyd himself. Boyd's just like the lightning rod for my frustration. He's just doing what Dash asks him to, which is charge up and down the wing all day and like help his fullback out.
Stats say that he covers the miles.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing what the manager wants. In terms of other stuff to look out for from the Southampton game, they are in really poor form, actually. They lost the last three league games and they failed to beat Norwich away in the FA Cup at the weekend, so they've got a replay as well, which might come into Claude Puel's thinking when he picks his team, that he's going to have another game in 2 or 3 days. So that's something else to keep in mind. But as we've touched on, Kevin, Southampton at home, they're only a point above us in the table. These are the sorts of games that now we expect to win, really.
Yeah, and actually, you're in a weird situation now where we go into all home games, really, expecting a win, even when the big boys come along, but we're hopeful of getting a good result. We might not have that quite expectation, but we're quite confident. You even look at all the big teams we've played, even when we got beat by Arsenal and City, you look at that and think we probably could or maybe should have got more out of those. So yeah, when some of the not outstanding teams come out, like Southampton, the very good teams, on paper you'd say they're a better team than us, but when you're playing at Turf Moor, you absolutely expect a win. That's not to say we'd be massively disappointed with a draw. It'd still be a good result against a good team. But yeah, I think every fan going into Turf Moor, in the home end at least, is going to be going in there expecting a win, and that's what we'll be going for.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the fixtures we've got coming up, I think it's important to keep this home form momentum going for a little while, because we've got that horrible run of away games coming up in the spring, and after Leicester come at the end of the month, we've got Chelsea and Spurs at home, so two games where we might not be expected to get anything, despite being really strong at home. So we talked about Middlesbrough and Sunderland being must-win games. I'm not going to say Southampton and Leicester are, but we need to be getting points on the board like these, because we are going to have a difficult run in the spring. Before we move on and do predictions then, and our brand new spanking shiny predictions league that we're going to launch on this week's podcast, after we forgot to do it last time, we do only have a few days left on our Kickstarter, and because I talk about it every week, I'm going to ask Kevin to fill you in, please, about the Kickstarter. Why should people pledge? What's up for grabs? Tell us what it's all about. The last time we're going to bore people about the Kickstarter, on the podcast at least.
First of all, just thank you to everyone who supported us. I think I was looking at the page now, and as of the time we're recording this now, we've had 56 people backers, which is just phenomenal. We originally wanted to get £100 to cover our costs for the next few months, and we're now at £744, which is fantastic. It's really humbling, and thank you so much to everyone who supported us. But the more we get, the more we can do. So far, we've been able to fund the podcast for 2017 season. We're going to be able to launch a new and improved website, a bit more interactive, a bit easier to use. Going to be able to do earlier podcasts. You can get reaction a bit sooner after the game, because there's a special episode exploring a topic in depth, a live podcast. And we're going to interview a Burnley legend. Our last goal is at £1,000. If we can do that, we'll be able to partner with a local charity. That means they'll get sponsorship of the podcast for the rest of the season, the rest of the year. And yeah, that's fantastic exposure for a local charity. And if we can get, so as I'm saying this, we're currently at £744. To get up to £1,000 is really, it's really very achievable with your help. So there's less than a week to go now. So if you can, the link is in the show notes. And yeah, please support us, because we really do appreciate it. There's lots of things you can get the more you pledge. We've got lots of rewards and off as well, like we're saying thanks for the podcast. So we've got stickers, you can be on the podcast introducing it, you can have your own little feature, all the way up to a special match day experience. So, apparently Jamie's just said it's like an Oscar speech. So I'm going to wrap it up now.
It is a season. Yeah. The one thing Kev forgot to mention is that we do have a prize as well for everyone who has pledged will be in the hat to win a copy of Joey Barton's book, No Nonsense. If you haven't pledged yet, you've still got a few days to do so. If you've been putting it off, don't put it off any longer because you're going to run out of time. And if we get to £1,000, that would be amazing. But thanks to everyone who's donated so far. But now, predictions. Natalie, there's going to be a predictions league on the podcast.
There's going to be a league.
We're all fully prepared for it, aren't we?
We're all kind of 75% prepared for it. So one of our listeners suggested that...
One of our listeners suggested...
Technically, he is one of our listeners. He suggested that... I actually made the comment that we don't ever follow up on our predictions the week after. So if somebody's got it spectacularly wrong and if somebody's got it spot on, we don't ever acknowledge that. And I think a lot of that is that sometimes not all of our predictions can be that serious.
Understand.
They came up with the idea.
I genuinely think an Andre Gray hat trick is going to happen every week.
You genuinely believe it as well, Bird, don't you? So the feature that was suggested to us was a little mini league where each week we would reflect on the predictions from last week. And the scoring is very simple. For every panel member who makes a prediction, if you get the result right, you score 1 point. But if you get the score right as well, you get 3 points. And at the end of the season, we will have a winner. So this is something that Kevin's going to be taking forward now. This is going to be his new feature on the podcast. We had a little review of the predictions in the first half of the season. I think I'd got 6 games in and nobody had got a point yet, so I don't think it worked that well. Saying that, my sudden reverse psychology absolutely killing it, and I was miles ahead of you all. So I think we're gonna wipe the slate clean and we're gonna start from this week. These are our first week of our predictions.
Can I have a jingle, because you've got your tweet of a week jingle. I want one.
If any of our listeners out there can create Kevin a little jingle for his predictions league, we would be very grateful and we'll give you a good shout out.
Please do send that in if you'd like to. The email address is podcast@nonanever.net. As always, you can tweet us @nonanevernet as well. But we will end the show on predictions. James, we'll start with you. Burnley v Southampton at Turf Moor. And there's a lot at stake now, so it seriously.
I really want to be serious, but at the same time, I also immediately want to say 3-0 Andre Gray hat trick.
Well, it could happen.
Is there a bonus point if Andre Gray hat trick actually happens?
No bonus points.
What's the point scoring again? Sorry.
1 point for the result, 3 points for the correct score.
See, because I want to be ambitious and be able to go big, but at the same time, you're rewarded, aren't you, by keeping it tight? More chance of happening. A lot of points.
You can hear the cogs turning in his head. You're really putting consideration into it.
I know. This is like last week. So we get into the stage that there's like a revision session at the end of every single podcast at the moment.
I've got it. Front caution to the win. 3-2, Andre Gray hat trick.
Natalie, you can go next.
Don't tell everyone
your turnstile number. God.
I'm not going to. Shut up. I am going to maintain my positive outlook at home. So I am going to go to my new revised turnstile, which is working very well for us at home. I don't think we'll have a better chance than this to beat Southampton at home. And I think it's going to be a 2-1 win to Burnley.
2-1. Kevin, you're next.
Well, I'm supposed to be writing these predictions down, and I have no idea what Natalie. Natalie just predicted pretty much every possible scoreline.
I think she settled on 2-1 Burnley, but I can't remember what James said. 3-2.
It's like when Tweet of the Week used to have a 20 tweet shortlist.
Oh, for God.
The glory days.
Okay, my prediction 1-0, done. Boom.
Oh, damn. I was going to say 1-0. Well, in that case.
Well, we're going to be joint top then, Jamie.
Well, no, because I'm going to change my mind and say 1-1. Nah. Negativity's Jamie Smith on the No Name Ever podcast. So, fingers crossed Burnley don't win, so I can win the predictions league. That'd be good.
You're opening up a can of worms there, Jamie. I'm so excited to see your tweets after this goes out.
One thing we haven't decided with this particular new feature, maybe our listeners want to get involved in this, is that whilst there's obviously going to be bragging rights for whoever wins the league, we should consider a forfeit for whoever comes last.
Well, so you sprung that on me.
Suggestions. I didn't say that in advance in case somebody boycotted the feature. It's out there now.
A forfeit should be suggestion. Have to listen to Natalie sing on the podcast again.
Hey.
Like, I didn't edit that out. That never happened.
No.
£1,000 on the Kickstarter. Natalie Bromley's greatest hits to everyone.
Yeah. Don't we don't want people that. To pledge? I don't we
They'll
want
be asking for
pledge.
Refunds. But yes, so listeners, if you have any ideas for forfeits for the panel member who comes last in the league at the end of the season, keep it clean, please, but send them in.
Blimey. I think we've got to leave it there before this
please
gets
leave it
out of control. But yeah, feel free to email us any feedback, questions, comments, etc., or apparently suggestions for forfeits for the predictions league.
Jingles. Remember
jingles.
Jingles.
Don't forget
as well.
Jingles. Yeah, so please get in touch. As always, we love hearing from listeners. Email address is podcast@nonainever.net. You can also tweet us @nonainevernet. As I've said a couple of times already, the Kickstarter does only have a few days to go. Thanks to everyone who's donated so far. Pledge has started at £3. We are trying to get to £1,000 in the next few days. So if you are thinking about pledging, get a move on. Thanks also to Rick, who provides our artwork, FA Cup themed artwork this week. Thanks to Adam, who's going to edit the podcast. Thanks to Natalie, Kevin and James for joining me on this week's podcast. I've been Jamie Smith, and we'll be back next week. Goodbye. A forfeit? What the fuck? You dropped that one on us. Hello, Kevin. Are you talking on mute again? Unmute before you talk.
Why have I done that twice in one day? What's wrong with me?
I just really imagine you chatting away to yourself. Aren't I'm making such great points. This is going
so
well.
Insightful. Really insightful. Great point, Kev.
I do this at work all the time as well. I'll be having meetings at work and then someone, I realize, why is no one listening to me? Why is no one, I realize I'm muted. So I just think,
everyone just thinks you spend all day asleep, clearly now. Yeah.